This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. A group of activists and historians has been working to recognise the victims of the Ocoee massacre on Election Day in 1920. The work of the Truth and Justice Project of Orange County is also part of a nationwide movement to create memorials to lynching victims and help the communities where those lynchings took place come to terms with the past. Last week, the Truth and Justice Project hosted a screening of The Yard, a documentary about a professor's discovery of a slave yard in a parking lot in the church he attends in downtown Memphis. John Ashworth and Margaret Vandiver with the Memphis Lynching Sites Project spoke at the film screening. They joined me for a conversation along with Orlando historian Joy Wallace Dickinson. Well, John Ashworth is the executive director of the Lynching Sites Project of Memphis. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting us.
We're also joined by Dr. Margaret Vandiver. She's a retired professor with the University of Memphis, and she is a researcher for the Lynching Sites Project. Dr. Vandiver, thank you as well.
Thank you.
And Joy Wallace Dickinson is an historian and task force member of the Truth and Justice Project in Orange County. Joy, thank you as well.
Thank you.
John, I want to start with you. Tell me about the movie The Yard. What is this all about?
The movie The Yard is all about, everyone has heard of Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was a general in the Confederate Army during the Civil War, founder of the Ku Klux Klan. Anyway, in 1954, after the Brown versus Board of Education was passed, in 1955, people in Memphis erected a marker on the site where he had his slave yard. And the site says that Nathan lived here and he was a successful businessman. Dr. Tim Huebner found that goes to Calvary Church, and the Calvary Church parking lot is exactly where that slave yard was. And once Dr. Huebner found that out, he had his historical methods class do the research to find out how he made his money. And that tells the story. And this is the documentary called The Yard, because it is The Yard is where he had his actual slave yard. That's why it's called The Yard. And so they have done the research to document the names of the people who were, in fact, slaved and sold from there and erected a new marker. So that's what this documentary, The Yard, is really all about.
So the original marker was commemorating Nathan Bedford Forrest as a successful businessman?
Yes.
And is that marker still there?
That marker is still there.
But there's now a companion marker
telling the true story, mm-hmm. the complete history of who Nathan Bedford Forrest really was. When you say successful businessman, what was his business? His business was selling people.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about the process of getting people to see the full picture there and marking that. Was that difficult? Was it difficult to get the community to accept that this is not the full story?
I'll kind of defer to Dr. Vandiver here. I don't think it was that difficult. That church has said, because they're in downtown Memphis, mm-hmm. and that church has said, we want to be involved. We want to take a look at the city, what we can do to help the city. So they start to do research. And in doing the research is when they found out where our parking lot is where the slave trade took place. And we need to do something about that. I mean, if you're going to be a church, churches need to do that. And so I think that was the impetus for it. I'm not aware of pushback in downtown Memphis or in Memphis proper against doing that. As a matter of fact, Dr. Huebner did not think he would have as many people supportive. But the day, and we had the dedication doing MLK 50 in Memphis downtown. Mm-hmm. The church was literally packed and overflowing. And spontaneously, people read the names of the people that were enslaved. For example, someone would say Mary, age 10, Sally, age 4, John, age 20. And people would just start standing up. And by the time they finished, everybody in the church is literally standing up. Tears are flowing. The community embraced it. Memphis is, to their credit, is really trying to deal with our past. Mm-hmm. And that is a lot of what we're really all about.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Vandiver, let me bring you into the conversation. Telling the real history of this particular place in Memphis sort of speaks to what the Lynching Sites Project is all about, right?
Yes, it does. What we're trying to do is tell the full history of race relations in Shelby County, and there is a tremendous amount of violence that occurred that has either been forgotten or has been misrepresented. One of the worst race massacres in American history happened in Memphis in 1866. I believe there were 46 African Americans killed, known, and probably others unknown, and two whites. And for many years, that's been called the Memphis Riot. It was not a riot. It was an all-out assault on the African-American community by whites. And what we're trying to do with the Lynching Sites Project is identify every case in which people were lynched by mobs and find as much of that history as we can and then commemorate it.
How much of that history is written down?
Not a lot of it, and much of what is written is scattered, contradictory, difficult to find. You have to really dig in the historical records, and you have to read the newspapers very critically. We do not have an existing African-American newspaper from the lynching era in Memphis, so we're relying entirely on the white press, and that brings with it a lot of difficulties, obviously.
Now, when you say the lynching era in Memphis, when was that? Because there's a pretty big span when you talk about that period of American history across the entire South, right?
Yes. The earliest lynching we've identified was 1851, and the most recent was 1939. The height of lynching in Shelby County was in the 1890s. Which seems to be true in many areas of the American South.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joy Wallace Dickinson, hearing this and thinking about what was happening in Shelby County, there are echoes of what was going on in Orange County, right? I mean, and you're involved in a project to try and get people to understand the history of what happened in Ocoee. Just catch us up to speed. What was going on there, and why is that important, and how that fits into this conversation?
Well, it's so interesting listening to John and Margaret, because so many of the themes that have come up there come up, I think, everywhere where you're dealing with this kind of difficult history about lynching. And the event in Ocoee was a long time called the Ocoee Riot. This happened, but is now usually called the Ocoee Massacre. One of the most influential and dramatic events that happened in Orange County, but for a long time just was a taboo to even talk about, I think, in both the black and white communities. It happened on election night 1920. It was the first election in which women were allowed to vote. Unlike a lot of cases, it did revolve around voting. And at the end of election day, basically, the black community of Ocoee had been destroyed, and a melee had erupted, and many people died, and including one well-known victim, July Perry, who was lynched in Orlando.
And there is work underway now to get folks to recognize that this happened and have some kind of marker saying this is what happened on this place at this time.
Right. I'm a volunteer with the nonprofit Truth and Justice Project of Orange County, which is affiliated with the Equal Justice Institute in Montgomery. And part of our goal is to document cases of lynching and to bring this history to the public and acknowledge it, study it and acknowledge it, and commemorate it with markers. And we've, in fact, already planned in had a marker approved to honor Mr. Perry that's going to be dedicated in June. We've also held a lot of events around Orange County to educate people about the history of the event and discuss it, and with the goal of reconciliation and the feeling that you can't really heal wounds from these events unless you really talk about them and learn about them. And that is difficult to do because, as Margaret said, it involves piecing together records and documents from newspapers and people's letters and census records. It's not so easy.
John, how long has the Lynching Sites Project been underway?
The Lynching Sites Project is probably coming up on about 3 years in existence. In December of 2015, Brian Stevenson, the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative, spoke to a group of people in Memphis. And what he said is that Shelby County, Tennessee, you had more lynchings than any other county in the state. And at that time, they had identified 21. When Dr. Vandiver joined the staff, we now know about 37 individual cases that occurred. But that's how the Lynching Sites Project got started, with the idea that we are going to confront what happened in Shelby County in some meaningful way. And we began to do that. We've erected two markers thus far. We have two more in the process going this year, and we have some others in the pipeline as well. So we're about 3 years old.
And it sounds like, I mean, describing the response to the marker you're talking about, which is discussed in the movie The Yard, there was pretty good support for that. But what about some of these other sites? Has there been some pushback?
Let me tell you about Shelby County. Shelby County actually has seven other governments inside of Shelby County. And some of those things exist because of this resistance between white, black. I mean, it's for want of a better word, it's white flight, or it's protecting that. Some of the communities have given us a little bit of pushback and said, no, we really don't want to do that. Other communities have totally embraced it. One, we just did one last year, L. Persons. Last year was the 100th anniversary in 1917. In 1917, a man by the name of L. Persons was lynched on the Wolf River in Memphis, and there were 5,000 people there. It was called a spectacle lynching. Well, Lynching Sites Project decided to do a 100th commemoration or memorialization and put a marker up. Two high schools in Memphis, high school students found out about it and got involved, and they did their own research about it, and they came up with a separate marker. So we erected two markers about L. Persons. We had the event, and we had probably 500 or 600 people there who actually embraced this. So, but overall, I would say that Memphis, Tennessee, for the most part, and most of Shelby County, has in fact embraced this, that we do need to do that. Yes, there's some pushback. Mm-hmm. Margaret, you...
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Memphis as a city is about 65% African American, and the county is much whiter. So sometimes I think approaching this out in the county is going to be a little bit more difficult, perhaps, to get the support. But if I could just say one other thing about the L. Persons commemoration. Mr. Persons was lynched because he was a suspect in the beheading and murder of a young white girl. We were able to trace collateral descendants of Mr. Persons and of the victim in the case, and they came to the commemoration, and the two of them, the descendant of the murder victim and the descendant of the lynched man, stood together and unveiled the marker together. So that was an extraordinary moment for us to be able to bring those two families together and bridge that history.
Is that unusual to have that kind of reconciliation underway? Because, I mean, this is painful stuff.
It's very painful, and sometimes the descendants of people who were involved in lynchings do not want to confront that. And you can certainly understand that they don't want to think of their relatives, their ancestors, in that light. So it's very difficult.
You mentioned, though, the crowd that assembled to watch this. And
the original legend, yes.
Right. And a lot of them there were postcards made of them. I mean, the photographic record it's horrifying and extraordinary at the same time.
It is. And you have to keep in mind, doing this era, you're in an era when this is occurring literally all over the country. It's concentrated in the South, and Dr. Vanna has written a book about this called Lethal Punishment. But you have to keep in mind that it was actually published in the paper that there is going to be a lynching. This happened in any number of lynchings all over the Southeast, that there's going to be a lynching. And people would let church out even. And they'd even run buses, and they'd even run trains out to where these lynchings are going to take place. And that's what happened in this case. In this case, it was announced that there was going to be this lynching. They took him back out to the site where they found the young lady. They tied him to a log. They set him on fire. And there's a report that they had a young African-American young man about 9 years old sitting there that made him sit and say, go back and tell people, you know, what will happen. And then once L. Person is dead, they dismembered his body, cut his head off, and threw it at African-Americans down on Beale Street. So these are things that occurred. This is a terror campaign, not just to get rid of the person, but it is intended to send a message, as most of these lynchings did.
Joy, what does it mean to have the work that you all, as part of the Truth and Justice Project, are doing in Ocoee and Orange County, connected to this bigger project, this bigger mission of trying to commemorate the victims of, you know, this terrible period in American history?
Well, it has a lot to do with, I think, that in you can't move forward and really understand the problems we have with race in this country until you look at some of this really difficult history. And it is painful. So I think we see ourselves as the work we do here is important, but it is part of a larger network. And we've learned a lot and been inspired by the work of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery and the Civil Rights Museum that they've started there and the Memorial to Lynching Victims.
What are your goals for making sure that people don't forget about the Ocoee Massacre?
Well, one of the exciting things we have coming up, and I think our goals are just so that people know about it. It gets forgotten and it gets very confused with other dramatic events, like recently the Groveland Four, who were involved in that incident in around 1950, have been pardoned, and people get the Ocoee Massacre confused with that. They get it confused with Groveland. They get it confused with Rosewood. And other things, not so much as known about it, but through the programs we have, we hope that people will know about it and talk about it and talk about how we don't want things like this to ever happen again because of people really dehumanizing other people. Mm-hmm. We have an exciting exhibit, I think, coming up in connection with the Orange County Regional History Center. It'll be there in 1920, and will be the first historic exhibit in Orange County about the Ocoee event. And we're very excited about that. And we think there'll be a lot of programs related to that and chances to discuss it. And as I said, we've already been doing that and really gotten great response.
John.
Yeah. One of the other things I was going to say as we're talking about this is the other thing that's important to keep in mind as we talk about this racial terror is to understand the links between that and where we are today. There's really a straight line. It's a difficult conversation, but there's a straight line between the terrorism that existed then to send the message and where we are in terms of race relations today.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. After the break, we continue our conversation with John Ashworth, Margaret Vandiver, and Joy Wallace Dickinson. Intersection's back in a minute.